NPR Playhouse. The Sounds of Theater from National Public Radio.
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy by Douglas Adams. Starring Peter Jones as The Book.
Arthur Dent, a perfectly ordinary Earthman, was rather surprised when his friend Ford Prefect suddenly revealed himself to be from a small planet somewhere in the vicinity of Betelgeuse, and not from Guildford after all. He was even more surprised when a few minutes later the Earth was unexpectedly demolished to make way for a new hyperspace bypass. But this was as nothing to their joint surprise when they are rescued from certain death by a stolen spaceship manned by Ford's semi-cousin, the infamous Zaphod Beeblebrox, and Trillian, a rather nice astrophysicist Arthur once met at a party in Islington. However, all four of them are soon totally overwhelmed with surprise when they discover that the ancient world of Magrathea, a planet famed in legend for its surprising trade in manufacturing other planets, is not as dead as it was supposed to be. For Zaphod, Ford, and Trillian, surprise is pushed to its very limits when this happens. And when Arthur Dent encounters Slati Bartfast, the Magrathean coastline designer, who won an award for his work on Norway, and learns that the whole history of mankind was run for the benefit of a few white mice anyway, surprise is no longer adequate, and he is forced to resort to astonishment.
Mice? What do you mean, mice? I think we must be talking at cross purposes.
These creatures you call mice are not quite as they appear. They are merely the protrusions into our dimension of vast, hyper-intelligent, pan-dimensional beings. The whole business with the trees and the squeaking is just a front.
A front?
Oh, yes. You see, the mice set up the whole Earth business as an epic experiment in behavioral psychology, in which your planet Earth and its people formed the matrix of an organic computer.
Attention, please. Slati Bartfast, with Slati Bartfast and the visiting Earth creature, please report immediately to the works reception area. Thank you.
However, in the field of management relations, they're absolutely shocking.
Really?
Yes, well, you see, every time they give me an order, I just want to jump on a table and scream.
I can see that would be a problem.
There are, of course, many problems connected with life, of which some of the most popular are, why are people born, why do they die, and why do they spend so much of the intervening time wearing digital watches? Many millions of years ago, a race of hyper-intelligent, pan-dimensional beings got so fed up with all the constant bickering about the meaning of life, which used to interrupt their favorite pastime of Brocky and Ultra cricket, a curious game which involved suddenly hitting people for no readily apparent reason and running away, that they decided to sit down and solve the problem once and for all. And to this end, they built themselves a stupendous supercomputer which was so amazingly intelligent that even before its data banks had been connected up, it had started from first principles with, I think, therefore I am, and had got as far as deducing the existence of rice pudding and income tax before anyone managed to turn it off. Could a mere computer solve the problem of life, the universe, and everything? Fortunately for posterity, there exists a tape recording of what transpired when the computer was given this particularly monumental task. Arthur Dent stops off in Slati Bartfast's study to hear it.
What is this great task for which I, deep thought, the second greatest computer in the universe of time and space,
wait a minute,
have been called into existence?
Well, your task, O computer, is to calculate...
This isn't right. Deep thought.
Speak, and I will hear.
Are you not, as we designed you to be, the greatest, most powerful computer in all creation?
I describe myself as the second greatest, and such I am.
But this is preposterous. Are you not a greater computer than the milliard gargantuan brain at Maximegalon, which can count all the atoms in a star in a millisecond?
The milliard gargantuan brain, a mere abacus. Mention it not.
And are you not a more fiendish disputant than a great hyperlobic omnicognate neutron wrangler, which
the
can
great
destroy...
hyperlobic omnicognate neutron wrangler can talk all four legs of an Arcturan megadonkey, but only I can persuade it to go for a walk afterward. Molest me not with this
pocket calculator stuff.
Then what's the problem?
I speak, Ognam, but the computer that is to come after me.
Oh, come on. I think this is getting needlessly messianic.
You know nothing of future time. And yet, in my teeming circuitry, I can navigate the infinite delta streams of future probability and see that there must one day come a computer whose merest operational parameters I am not worthy to calculate, but which it will be my destiny eventually to design.
Can we get on and ask the question?
Speak.
Oh, deep thought computer, the task we have designed you to perform is this. We want you to tell us the answer.
The answer? The answer to what?
Life!
The universe!
Everything!
Tricky.
But can you do it?
Yes, I can do it.
You can!
There is an answer? A simple answer?
Yes. Life, the universe, and everything. There is an answer. But I'll have to think about it.
What do you want?
I am Magic Thoris.
And I demand that I am Broombandle.
It's all right, they don't need to demand that.
All right. I am Broombandle, and that is not a demand. That is a solid fact.
Who are you, anyway?
We are philosophers.
Though we may not be.
Yes, we...
We are quite definitely here as representatives of the Amalgamated Union of Philosophers, Sages, Luminaries, and other professional thinking persons.
Mm-hmm.
And we want this machine off. And we want it off now.
Yeah.
By law, the quest for the ultimate truth is quite clearly the unalienable prerogative of your working fingers.
That's right.
I mean, what's the use of our sitting up all night saying there may...
Or may not be.
Or may not be a god if this machine comes along next morning and gives you his telephone number.
We demand rigidly defined areas of doubt and uncertainty.
Might I make an observation at this point?
We demand that that machine not be allowed to think about this problem.
If I might make an observation...
We'll go on strike.
That's right. You'll have a national philosopher's strike on your hands.
Who will that inconvenience?
Never you mind who it'll inconvenience, you box of blacklegging binary bits. It'll hurt, Buster. It'll hurt.
If I might make an observation, all I want to say is that my circuits are now irrevocably committed to computing the answer to life, the universe, and everything.
Ah, come on!
But the program will take me 7.5 million years to run.
7.5 million years?
Yes, I said I'd have to think about it, didn't I? And it occurs to me that running a program like this is bound to cause sensational public interest.
And so,
any philosophers who are quick off the mark are going to clean up in the prediction business.
Prediction business?
Obviously. You just get on the pundit circuit. You all go on the chat shows and the color supplements and violently disagree with each other about what answer I'm eventually going to produce. And if you get yourselves clever agents, you'll be on the gravy train for life.
Bloody hell, now that's what I call thinking. Here, Broombandle, why do we never think of things like that?
Dunno. Think our minds must be too highly trained, Magic Thighs.
But I don't understand what all this has got to do with the Earth and mice and things.
All will become clear to you, Earthman. Are you not anxious to hear what the computer had to say 7.5 million years later?
Oh, well, yes, of course. Quite.
Here is the recording of the events of that fateful day.
O people who wait in the shadow of deep thought, honored descendants of Broombandle and Magic Thighs, the greatest and most truly interesting pundits the universe has ever known, the time of waiting is over! 7.5 million years our race has waited for this great and hopefully enlightening day, the day of the answer! Never again will we wake up in the morning and think, who am I? What is my purpose in life?
Does it really, cosmically speaking, matter if I don't get up and go to work? Or today we will finally learn, once and for all, the plain and simple answer to all these nagging little problems of life, the universe, and everything. From today, we can enjoy our game of Brockian ultra cricket in the firm and comfortable knowledge that the meaning of life is now well and truly sorted out.
5,000 generations ago, our ancestors set this program in motion.
An awesome prospect. Deep Thought prepares to speak.
Good evening.
Good evening, old Deep Thought. Do you have...
An answer for you? Yes, I have.
There really is one.
There really is one.
To everything? To the great question of life, the universe, and everything?
Yes.
Now you're ready to give it to us?
I am.
Now?
Now.
Wow.
Though I don't think you're going to like it.
It doesn't matter. We must know it.
Now?
Yes, now.
All right.
Well?
You're really not going to like it.
Tell us.
All right. The answer to everything.
Yes?
Life, the universe, and everything.
Yes.
Is.
Yes.
Is.
Yes.
42.
We are going to get lynched, you know that.
It was a tough assignment.
42?
I think the problem such as it was too broadly based. You never actually stated what the question was.
But it was the ultimate question, the question of life, the universe, and everything.
Exactly. Now you know that the answer to the ultimate question of life, the universe, and everything is 42. All you need to do now is find out what the ultimate question is.
All right. Can you please tell us the question?
The ultimate question.
Yes.
Of life, the universe,
and everything?
And everything.
Yes.
Tricky.
But can you do it?
No.
Oh, God.
But I'll tell you who can.
Who? Tell us.
Who is...
I speak of none but the computer that is to come after me.
What computer?
A computer whose nearest operational parameters I am not worthy to calculate, and yet I will design it for you.
Really?
A computer which can calculate the question to the ultimate answer. A computer of such infinite and subtle complexity that organic life itself will form part of its operational matrix. And it shall be called the Earth.
Hmm? Huh. What a dull name.
So there you have it. Deep Thought designed it, we built it, and you lived on it.
And the Vogons came and destroyed it 5 minutes before the program was completed.
Yes. 10 million years of planning and work gone. Just like that. Well, that's bureaucracy for you.
You know, all this explains a lot of things. All through my life, I've had this strange, unaccountable feeling that something was going on in the world. And no one would tell me what it was.
No, that's just perfectly normal paranoia. Everyone in the universe has that.
Oh. Well, perhaps it means that somewhere outside...
Maybe. Who cares? Perhaps I'm old and tired, but I always think that the chances of finding out what really is going on are so absurdly remote that the only thing to do is to say, hang the sense of it and just keep yourself occupied. Look at me. I design coastlines. I got an award for Norway. Where's the sense in that? None that I've been able to make out. I've been doing fjords all my life. For a fleeting moment, they become fashionable, and I get a major award. In this replacement Earth we're building, they've given me Africa to do, and of course I'm doing it with all fjords again, because I happen to like them. And I'm old-fashioned enough to think that they give a lovely Baroque feel to a continent. And they tell me it's not equatorial enough. What does it matter? Science has achieved some wonderful things, of course, but I'd far rather be happy than right any day.
And are you?
No. That's when it all falls down, of course.
Pity. It sounded like quite a good lifestyle, otherwise.
Attention, please, Slotty Buttfast. Would Slotty Buttfast and the visiting Earth creature please report immediately? Repeat immediately to the works reception area. Come on, you guys. The mice aren't one to hang about in this dimension all day.
Come on, I suppose we'd better go and see what they want.
I seem to be having this tremendous difficulty with my lifestyle. As soon as I reach some kind of definite policy about what is my kind of music and my kind of restaurant and my kind of overdraft, people start blowing up my kind of planet and throwing me out of their kind of spaceships. It's so hard to build up anything coherent. Oh, I'm sorry, all this must sound rather fatuous to you.
Yes, I thought so.
Just forget I ever said it.
It is, of course, well known that careless talk costs lives, but the full scale of the problem is not always appreciated. For instance, at the very moment that Arthur Dent said, "I seem to be having this tremendous difficulty with my lifestyle," a freak wormhole opened up in the fabric of the space-time continuum and carried his words far, far back in time across almost infinite reaches of space to a distant galaxy where strange and warlike beings were poised on the brink of frightful interstellar battle. The two opposing leaders were meeting for the last time, and a dreadful silence fell across the conference table as the commander of the Vlahergs, resplendent in his black jeweled battle shorts, gazed levelly at the Gugugment leader squatting opposite him in a cloud of green, sweet-smelling steam, and with a million sleek and horribly beweaponed star cruisers poised to unleash electric death at his single word of command, challenged the vile creature to take back what it had said about his mother. The creature stirred in his sickly broiling vapor, and at that very moment, the words,
"I seem to be having this tremendous difficulty with my lifestyle,"
drifted across the conference table. Unfortunately, in the Vlahurg tongue, this was the most dreadful insult imaginable, and there was nothing for it but to wage terrible war. Eventually, of course, it was realized that the whole thing had been a ghastly mistake, and so the two opposing battle fleets settled their few remaining differences in order to launch a joint attack on our galaxy, now positively identified as the source of the offending remark. For thousands more years, the mighty ships tore across the empty wastes of space and finally dived screaming onto the planet Earth, where, due to a terrible miscalculation of scale, the entire battle fleet was accidentally swallowed by a small dog. Those who study the complex interplay of cause and effect in the history of the universe say that this sort of thing is going on all the time, but are powerless to prevent it. It's just life, they say. Meanwhile, Arthur Dent is about to discover the answer to the disturbing question posed in last week's installment. Are his companions, Ford, Zaphod, and Trillian, lying bleeding to death in a subterranean corridor? Or have they merely slipped out for a quick meal somewhere?
Arthur, you're safe.
Am I? Oh, good.
Hi, Arthur, come and join us.
What happened to you?
Well, our hosts here sort of attacked us with a fantastic, dismodulating anti-phase stun ray, and then invited us to this amazingly keen meal by way of making it up to us.
Hosts? What hosts? I can't see any hosts.
Welcome to lunch, our creature.
What? Who said that? Oh, there's a mouse on the table.
Oh, haven't you found out yet, Arthur?
Found out what? I see, yes. Oh, yes. I just wasn't quite prepared for the full reality of it.
Arthur, let me introduce you. This is Benji Mouse.
Hi.
Hi.
And this is Frankie, Mouse.
Nice to meet you.
It seems they control quite a large sector of the universe in our dimension.
But aren't they...
Yes, they are the mice I took with me from the Earth. It seems our whole journey has been stage-managed from the beginning.
Excuse me.
Yes, thank you, Slotty Bop-Bop. You may go.
Oh, very well. Thank you, sir. I'll just go and get on with some of my fjords, then.
In fact, that won't be necessary.
What?
We won't be requiring the new Earth after all. We've had this rather interesting proposition put to us.
You can't mean that. I've got 1,000 glaciers poised and ready to roll over Africa.
Well, perhaps you can take a quick skiing holiday before you dismantle them.
Skiing holiday? Those glaciers are works of art. Elegantly sculpted contours, soaring pinnacles of ice, deep, majestic ravines. It would be sacrilege to go skiing on high art.
Thank you, Slotty Bop-Bop. That will be all.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Well, goodbye, Earthman. I hope the lifestyle comes together.
Goodbye, then. Sorry about the field.
Now, Earth creature, we have, as you know, been more or less running your planet for the last 10 million years in order to find this wretched thing called the ultimate question.
Why?
No, we already thought of that one, but it doesn't fit the answer.
No, I mean, why have you been doing it?
Oh, eventually just habit, I think, to be brutally honest. And this is more or less the point. We are sick to the teeth of the whole thing, and the prospect of doing it all over again on account of those Winnet-ridden Vogons, quite frankly, gives me the screaming heebie-jeebies. You know what I mean? We've been offered a quite enormously fat contract to do the 5DTV chat show and lecture circuit, and I'm very much inclined to take it.
I would, wouldn't you, Ford?
Oh, yes, jump at it like a shot.
But that's exactly the attitude those philosophers took. Does no one in this galaxy do anything other than appear on chat shows?
The point is this. We are in a position to give you a very important commission. We still want to find the ultimate question because it gives us a lot of bargaining muscle with the 5D TV companies. So it's worth a lot of money. quite clearly, if we're sitting there in the studio, mentioning that we happen to know the answer to life, the universe, and everything, and then eventually have to admit that it's 42, then I think the show is probably quite short.
Yes, but doesn't that mean you've got to go through your whole 10-million-year program again?
We think there might be a shortcut. Your agent has...
That's me.
Is it?
Your agent has suggested that both you and Ascal, as last-generation products of the computer matrix, are probably in an ideal position to find the question for us, and find it quickly. Go out and find it, and we'll make you a reasonably rich man.
We're holding out for extremely rich.
All right, extremely rich. You drive a hard bargain, Beeble Brock. Hell, bells, what is it now?
Emergency, emergency. Hospital ship just landed on planet. Intruders now in the works reception area. Defense stations, defense stations. Come on, you guys. What are you nuts? Get out of there.
Are you thinking what I'm thinking?
Oh, police. Hell and bats, dude. We've got to get out.
Police?
Yeah, it's this wretched spacecraft we stole, and I left them a note explaining how they could make a profit on the insurance claim, but it doesn't seem to have worked.
Oh, come on then, let's move.
Yeah. Man, find us the question.
How?
No, that doesn't work either.
We will find it. Come on, get out of here.
Thanks for the meal, guys. Sorry we've got to rush.
Which way, Zaphod?
At a wild guess, I'd say down here.
Hold on, let's go.
Okay, Beeble Brocks. All that right there. We've got you covered.
You want to try a guess at all, Ford?
Okay, this way.
Yeah,
right, okay.
We don't want to shoot you, Beeble Brocks.
Suits me fine.
We're cornered.
Oh, hell. I think I brought my adrenaline pills. All right. Behind this computer bank. Get down.
Hey, they're shooting at us.
Yeah.
I thought they said they didn't want to do that.
Yeah, I thought they said that.
Hey, I thought you said you didn't want to shoot us.
It isn't.
What did he say?
He said it isn't easy being a cop.
Well, surely that's his problem, isn't it?
I'd have thought so.
Hey, listen, I think we've got enough problems of our own with you shooting at us, so if you could avoid laying your personal problems on us as well, I think we'd probably find it easier to cope.
Now, see here, buddy. You're not dealing with any dumb, two-bit trigger-pumping morons with low hairlines, little piggy eyes, and no conversation.
Nah.
We're a couple of intelligent, caring guys, so you'd probably like if you met us socially.
That's right, I'm really sensitive.
Who are these guys?
I think I preferred it when they were shooting.
So are you going to come quietly or are you going to let us blast you?
Which would you rather?
You still there?
Yes.
We didn't enjoy doing that at all.
Beeble Brocks, either you all give yourselves up now and let us beat you up a bit. Though not very much, of course, because we are firmly opposed to needless violence.
Get against it.
This entire planet, possibly one or two others we noticed on our way out here.
But that's crazy. You wouldn't blow up this entire planet just to get a bloody spaceship back.
Oh, yes, we would. I think we would. Wouldn't we?
Oh, yeah, we'd have to, no question.
But why?
Tell her.
Because there are some things you've got to do even if you are an enlightened liberal cop who knows all about sensitivity and everything.
This is true.
I just don't believe these guys.
Shall we shoot them again for a bit?
Yeah, why not?
We're not going to be safe behind this computer bank for much longer, fellas. It's been really nice knowing you. I just want to say that.
Yeah, it's really been great. And it was really nice bumping into you again.
Yeah,
the computer bank is absorbing a hell of a lot of energy. I think it's about to blow.
It's a shame we never managed to get the work done revising the book. I thought it looked rather promising.
Yeah.
What book? The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh, that thing.
Look, I hate to say this, lads, but this thing really is going to blow up.
Okay.
A
Assuming our heroes survive this latest reversal in their fortunes, will they find somewhere reasonably interesting to go now? Will Arthur Dent or Trillium manage to find the question to the ultimate answer? Who will they meet at the restaurant at the end of the universe? Find out in next week's exciting installment of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
In that episode of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Peter Jones was the book. Richard Vernon was Slaty Bartfast. Simon Jones played Arthur Dent. Jeffrey McGiven, Ford Prefect and Deep Thought. Mark Wing Davies, Zaphod Beeblebrox. Susan Sheridan, Trillium. Jonathan Adams, Magic Thighs and the Cheerleader. Ray Hassett, the first computer programmer, Bang Bang and PA Voice. Jeremy Brown, second computer programmer. James Broadbent, Broom Fondle and Shooty. Peter Hawkins, Frankie Mouse. And David Tate, Benji Mouse. The ultimate answer to life, the universe and everything was revealed by kind permission of the Amalgamated Union of Philosophers, Sages, Luminaries and other professional thinking persons. The programme was written by Douglas Adams and produced by Geoffrey Perkins with the assistance of the BBC Radiophonic Workshop.
NPR Playhouse. This is NPR, National Public Radio.